Coming up on this week's show, Sally and I talk about Facebook and how it is changing our definition of community or fellowship. And Wells Tech starts pinning on a new social network. All that and more coming up next. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 222, February 8th, 2012. And joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. 2 of 5 in the month of February. I'm still in awe that we have 5 Wednesdays.
So episode 222, does that remind you of anything?
Yeah, I'm that old. Room 222.
There's probably many of our listeners who have no idea what we're talking about. But I don't remember all the characters. I remember, was it Link? No. Yeah, I think so. Or am I thinking of the Mod Squad? That's also showing my age.
Yeah, this is like early 70s.
Oh, yes, yes.
She was on, so long time ago.
So speaking of education, we're reading a book.
Yeah, sure. We are back to our Church of Facebook, Chapter 5, mm-hmm. which is called Adaptation. We started out this conversation way back, I think, in September. We've had the honor of having author Jesse Rice join us for our podcast.
Yeah, so it was fun.
Just picking up on our podcast, you might want to go back and listen to the Church of Facebook series. You can find it with a tag on our Wells Tech podcast site, COF, mm-hmm. for Church of Facebook.
Ah, so okay.
Check it out.
Worth a read, and we've got it in multiple formats. Sally, you were moaning a little bit at the beginning of the show about having to read this on a Kindle.
Yeah, it's kind of my first Kindle experience, I guess, for intense reading or
scholarly.
An album.
Right.
You know, not just a relaxing Kindle reading experience like normal, but one where I need to take notes and be aware of where I am in the book and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge for me. I didn't expect.
Yeah, it's kind of like a GPS where with a regular old map, you kind of got a sense for where you were in relation to everything else. I find the Kindle experience pretty similar in that regard for these kinds of scholarly purposes where you're not quite sure where you are in relation to the book. You're not quite sure how far you are, you know, into a chapter or into the book, and getting back to it can be difficult. So I think we're both coming to the conclusion that e-books are probably best for just
relaxing reading
or you know, just laying back and enjoy, you know, the enjoyment of it, entertainment, mm-hmm. the entertainment value.
You're doing a techie version as well, Martin?
Doing audio, right? I've got this on an audio book. So I like that because then I can be doing other things. I can be driving or the dishes or whatever, and I can listen to it. And still, then you have to take notes or be able to take notes on things like this. But I've read this 2 or 3 times now, so I've got a little bit of an advantage over you, too. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about adaptation. The beginning of each chapter, Jesse brings in an illustration of some sort, and the illustration in this case was the Hubble Space Telescope, which is an interesting topic. I know I was this was in the 80s, I believe, when all this was going on, and I wasn't aware of all the issues that they had getting that telescope up in the sky. And I was also kind of surprised at how shallow it only went up, like 300 and some odd miles. I was thinking something much further up there, but this was a big deal when they got that up there, and then all the troubles they had not getting it up there, but once it was up there, getting it to work, because apparently they hadn't crafted the mirrors exactly right, and it gave a distorted view of things, and it didn't serve the purpose. So the use of that illustration for a topic or a chapter called adaptation is that things had to be done to it to make it usable, and he transitions from that illustration into a discussion about Facebook, where it has caused us to adapt in how we relate to each other. What he would typically call community, maybe in our circles we would call fellowship, our ability to fellowship with each other, to socialize with other Christians. He makes a big deal throughout this chapter of how Facebook changes things.
Sure. I guess if we turn back the clock, and it doesn't have to be back very far, but just a few years ago, mm-hmm. when Facebook didn't exist, our communities consisted of people that we gathered together in face-to-face environments with. And we did that specifically through church communities or maybe other affinity groups that we were a part of. And we had a shared purpose, and we had some history together. And, you know, I know one pastor along the way characterized it as friendship by ordeal. So as you go through events with people, you grow together mm-hmm. as a community. And right. that's the community that us old schoolers that know about Room 222 and that kind of thing right. are familiar with and comfortable with. And yep. that's how we are invested in each other mm-hmm. by being parts of these face-to-face communities. And in this chapter, he contrasts that real community feeling that we're used to this new virtual community that's become a part of all of our lives through the advent of Facebook.
Yeah, that shared history concept is kind of interesting. Those people, those of our listeners who have ever gone through a building program will maybe realize this, where it's an ordeal for sure, but it does bring the congregation, or can bring the congregation, closer together, especially if they're doing a lot of the work themselves. When I was down in Downers Grove, Illinois, we went through a big building project, and I got involved with some different projects there with tiling and painting and landscaping and that kind of stuff. And you met people, you got to know people on a different level rather than just sitting next to them in a pew on Sunday morning. There was some familiarity, and there was, I think, greater community, greater fellowship as a result, and it was a neat experience. And he points out actually it's kind of interesting, we bring two of our books together. One of the recent books we read was by Shane Hipps, The Power of Electronic Culture. And Jesse Rice references an interview Shane Hipps did for, I think, Christianity Today, was it? Something like that. And Shane talks about this concept of virtual community, and that it's community, but it's virtual, but it's really not community. And he lists four reasons. To have community, he says, you need shared history, which we just talked about, permanence, or at least the some semblance of permanence, proximity, and shared imagination or vision. And he claims in this interview that Facebook only provides that last one, shared imagination or vision, because you're kind of there for the same reason. You want to connect with people, and you maybe have an interest in that in a virtual world, but you don't have necessarily shared history, permanence, or proximity in a Facebook world.
Kind of reminded me of some of my Wells Tech Facebook friends, who I'm really good friends with mm-hmm. these days, and we share a lot because we have that common techie interest. But yet they're people that I've never met face to face, and that I don't have that history with or anything. But mm-hmm. just kind of jump to that shared vision or imagination step there.
Right, but he argues that maybe that's not exactly right. That there is a way to kind of gain that over time. It was interesting, he used the term the communion of saints. And that kind of struck me that, yeah, that is true. There is a community based on our sainthood, based on our being called children of God. We have a shared history, right? We all come from the same background. We all are fighting original sin. We all have an experience of being in the church. This kind of reinforces my notion that Facebook is best at internal communications and internal community, not for a church to use as an outreach tool. So as a communion of saints, as a group of believers, We do have shared history. We do have a sense of permanence. We are connected together, you know, through the blood of Christ. And the proximity, I guess, from my vantage point, Facebook becomes that. You know, again, as you mentioned, we have people that I've never met in person, but I feel that I'm only a keystroke away from being next to them, being able to communicate with them. And the same with our Wellstack listeners. We have the ability to communicate with them. So I feel, even though we're not in the same room, we, in essence, are in a virtual room, so to speak.
So what I guess the bulk of this chapter is pointing to the fact that this real community definition and this virtual community definition are getting blurred.
Closer together, right.
Closer together, and for a growing number of people, especially maybe the younger generation, community to them is defined as maybe this combination of face-to-face and virtual community.
It's a mix, so, right?
Right, a mix.
They don't distinguish the two. So their Facebook friends and their high school or college friends or whatever the generation is that we're talking about, they view how they communicate with them, whether it be online or in person, as kind of the same channel. That it's just another way of doing it, which is very different than obviously it used to be, because that channel never really existed. You had to intentionalize a communication if you weren't in the same room. So it had to be a letter or a telephone call or something like that. Even email is a little bit disassociated, and I think that's why people, the younger generation, the generation that knows nothing about Room 222, likes that real-time nature of chatting and seeing when somebody's online and sharing stuff in real time with, like, Twitter updates and Foursquare check-ins and those kinds of things. It's all about real time, or that need maybe to have that proximity.
Yeah, and he really addresses this in the latter part of the chapter, where he moves on to some quotes and discussion related to being more intentional in our relationships, even though they're virtual relationships, not just being a consumer, not just dropping in and picking and choosing what we want from our friends list, mm-hmm. but actually contributing and being invested in the people. And I remember when we talked to Jesse that he talked about, you know, singling out a couple of people on your friends list to be more invested in for a month at a time or something like that.
Go ahead. He used the word service a lot here in this context, where community can't be achieved without service. And that's kind of our definition of fellowship, too. It's not all about me, which a lot of people think Facebook is. It's all about me and the followers and the likes and those kinds of things. Same with Twitter. But the difference, where you take Facebook from that kind of narcissistic tool to something that can provide that community atmosphere, that fellowship atmosphere where Christians can support each other, is that concept of service, where you're saying how it's not what's in it for me, but it's what's in it for you. How can I help you? How can I be of service to you? How can I help you through a situation? How can I be a friend?
I wonder if my mom is listening, because I remember her telling me as I was growing up, to have a friend, you have to be a friend.
Right.
And that just kind of rang in my ears as I was reading this. In order to experience the quality of relationships we want, we have to take responsibility. We have to be invested. We have to relate to others at that level. Mm-hmm. And so that's where that community is really going to come into play.
Yeah. And as people come into your social networks, you have all those opportunities. Now, you can't be the same level of friend, I think, to all of those people. And I think Jesse said that, too, when we talked to him. But there are opportunities to extend those relationships and be a friend on a lot of different levels, I suppose. And that's where I think personal evangelism comes in on Facebook, as opposed to the church's Facebook page. It's not so much there, because I think that does provide internal community, internal opportunities for information sharing and service for other fellow congregation members or other school family members, however it is that you're using it. But when you have that network of your own friends, even beyond the church, you have those personal opportunities to be a friend, and a friend shares Jesus. And I think that's part of the appeal of a social network, where you've got more connections than you could ever have, more opportunities for both service and for sharing than you ever had before.
It's one of the reasons I like seeing people on my friends list that, you know, I think I'd like to share Jesus with. You know, it's a good thing. So.
Yep. And that takes nurture and time and, you know.
For sure.
Different approach. So that is adaptation. If you would like to share your thoughts on Chapter 5, we'd love to hear those. If you're not following along in the book, go ahead and grab a copy. There's lots of ways to do that. In the show notes, we've got links to all that stuff, and we'd love to have you join the conversation as well. Sally, you felt that this chapter ended with kind of a cliffhanger.
It did. I get that we need to adapt our thinking, and we need to think of communities in a different way, but I didn't quite get how to do that. So maybe Chapter 6, which we'll talk about next month, will tell us.
Yep.
It's called Regeneration, so we'll see.
Tune in next week for that, or next month for that.
Next month, yep.
Shall we move on?
Sure. We have a
ministry resources.
That's right, a ministry resource to share. And this is kind of Sally doing show and tell. I recently put together a couple of videos using my iPad, and I wanted to give you guys some examples of things that you could do for your church or school around events or whatever, and not necessarily with an iPad. There's lots of different movie-making software out there. These are basically just photo slideshows with little video snippets intermixed. One I put together for our congregation. Once a year, we do something called Unity Sunday, where we have just one combined church service and a fellowship meal afterwards. We welcome our new members for that year, and then we look back at the year in review kind of thing. And so I put together a photo/video slideshow with highlights from our past year. And I thought you guys would enjoy seeing that as an example. And the other was a fun project I did really quick and easy with my kids in computer lab this week, where we put together a thank you video. We recently competed in math counts for the first time. I think I talked about that on the show a while back. And math counts is a national math testing program for middle school students, and it's sponsored by a lot of different techie kind of corporations. I know Raytheon's involved, and 3M in particular, our local 3M actually paid our fees to get into math counts and supported us with a practice meet and a trip to the regionals and things like that. And so we wanted to say thank you to them, and we put together this little video with the kids holding up signs, kind of like you've seen in some other videos that we've looked at recently. So again, most all of the work for this was done on my iPad, and it really wasn't that hard. I used the Apple iMovie software, and just wanted to give you guys an idea of some of the things you could do.
Very cool. I was wondering. You see, when you said iMovie, I was wondering whether you did that on a Mac, and I didn't think you had one. So you did that all on your iPad.
I did. Yep.
Very cool.
The only drawback, I will say one thing that I think is a little clunky about iMovie is that in order to include movie clips, they have to be actually in your root camera roll. And so over time, if you were to like move a movie clip off of your iPad and then want to put it back to create an iMovie, that root camera roll is locked up. You can't put things into that camera roll. So I had to keep the movies that I potentially want to use right there on my iPad so I can use them in iMovie. I can get to other directories of photos, so I can put photos back on there without a problem, but I can't put movies back on there. And so, yeah, that was the only challenge I had, but I managed to keep enough and have enough movies to include in there.
Okay. There's no organization to the camera roll either, is there? You can't put anything in folders or tag anything, right?
You can. Your photos. And actually, you could put your movies in folders, but you can't access those folders for iMovie. But you can. You sync to a particular folder in iTunes, and then you can have a subfolder structure underneath that, and that actually shows up in your camera roll. So you can organize it quite a bit.
Interesting. Okay. You must have, just based on what I know about you, Sally, you must have really enjoyed show and tell in school.
Oh, man, I did.
You do that every week now. That's fun.
Yeah.
Speaking of show and tell, our picks of the week.
Yep, it's time to talk about Pinterest. We were holding off on releasing Pinterest to the Wells Tech world, but we feel like we're ready to dip our toe in yet another social media stream. And so we've added a link on our show notes website to the Wells Tech Pinterest page. For those of you that aren't familiar, you'll want to just maybe check out our page and get a feel of what Pinterest is like. I'll kind of think of it as a visual Digo, a way to share images and video from web pages and, you know, have the links behind it if people want to drill down and actually get to the content associated with those images and videos. Mm-hmm. You can install a little pin tool into your toolbar of your browser, and when you're on a web page that you want to share, you just click that tool and it will add it to your Pinterest account. And it could be anything. I think we have some Wells Tech pins related to how to get scratches off of CDs using toothpaste, mm-hmm. or whatever it may be. And then when you visit the web page, it's this whole visual experience. You're just kind of flooded with a lot of different imagery, which as it combines and grows, turns out to be a really fun experience. I don't know how to describe it, but a lot of people are using it. I think it's probably more women than men at this mm-hmm. point. And I see a lot of food and a lot of fashion and a lot of crafts out there, at least in my view so far. Right. Although I did subscribe to some education boards and ed tech boards and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I see teachers sharing resources and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, my wife has found a lot of those and very useful, in fact. So
yeah. And the reason that I kind of ended up there was there was a big infographic that was recently published on Mashable that talked about how brands are using Pinterest to drive traffic to their shopping websites mm-hmm. and things like that. And just probably in the last month or two, it's picked up some serious steam and gotten a lot more traffic than many of the other social media sites out there. And so more and more people are finding out about it and jumping on board, and we'll see where it leads for Pinterest. But right now it's booming.
It is beta only, correct, right now? It's still not open to anybody. You have to request an invite.
Yeah, if you go to the site, there's a link that says request an invite, but it may be quicker to email wellstech@wells.net and let Martin or I send you an invite. Either way, once you have an account, then you begin following what's called boards. And when you follow those boards, they mash up into your homepage, kind of like your Facebook stream is a mixture of all different things, people that you follow and groups and things. On Pinterest, your homepage is a mashup of all the different boards are people that you follow on Pinterest.
Mm-hmm. I guess, and I'm going to be talking about Pinterest. I'm going down to Mexico on Friday, and I'm doing a technology presentation to the Mexican national pastors down there. And believe it or not, Pinterest is on my list of things to talk mm-hmm. about. And in my research, and I was doing a little bit of this even last night, is why I was wondering, well, how are churches or are churches using this at this point? Because it's very early on, and there are, of course, some early adopters, and we have some articles that I've tagged from. Where was it? Church Marketing Sucks, I think, had a two-part series on this, and one of the churches, one of the larger churches in the country, Mars Hill, is using this, and is probably a very good example of how a church could use it, where they've got different boards for different affinity groups. So they have a women in ministry group and a men in ministry group and a Bible study group and you know, different topics where you can paste or pin, I should say, different things on those boards. And I'm still trying to get my – I'll be honest. I'm still trying to get my arms around the concept, Sally, but I think – it's gaining speed faster than even Facebook did, which is kind of amazing. So it's something that churches probably need to pay attention to. And anything that has woman power behind it probably is something we should be paying attention to, too, as they are driving this. So usually technology starts out on the with the guys. But here it's really, like you mentioned, I think it's the gals who are really interested in this and driving this.
Yeah, you also tagged a few articles on DIGO called Pinterest for Churches, Part right. 1, The Basics, and Part 2, Strategy, that I thought had some really interesting points to consider. It's not all about just sharing your content as a congregation, but sharing
what things, you're about, interests, yeah.
Interests, there you go.
Right.
So yeah, I think it'll take a while for us to get a feel for how this might be used. And looking at the Mars Hill example is one place to get ideas at least. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
I will say, just from a technological standpoint, that they have a little growing to go or to do. I think the site is a little shaky at times, and their mobile apps are terrible. So I think they have some room for growth there. I mean, they are in beta yet, so you can understand that they're trying to, so I'm sure, keep up with the growth that maybe they didn't even expect. So they're not ready for prime time, but I think they'll get there eventually. So.
So just to reiterate, if you'd like an invite to Pinterest, just email us. And also, if you'd like to be a collaborator on our Wells Tech board, we invite you to be a part of that. Again, it'll be kind of like our DIGO group, where we have a group of people that can contribute our pin to our Wells Tech board, and we'll see a mashup of that. When you're a collaborator, that board just becomes one of the boards that you have access to pin things to. And it'll make more sense if you just jump in and give it a try.
Maybe that's what I need to do, spend a little time in there. That's just another place we need to look as well, Sally, when we prep for the show. What's on our Pinterest page?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we do like to get that feedback. So, all right, I guess I am up next. My pick of the week, and I was really shocked to find that in 4 years or 222 episodes, we hadn't ever talked about this tool, which is something I use almost every week, called Handbrake. It's an open source tool. It's available on almost every platform, Windows, Mac, Ubuntu, Fedora, so all the three major ones. Basically, it is a video encoding software. So you can plug in a DVD into your computer, and you can what they call rip or extract the files or convert the files into a format that your computer can read and other devices too. So they have presets there for your iPhone or your iPad, different kinds of video formats, MOV files or M4V files, those kinds of things. You can specify the resolution, the frame rate, those kinds of things, the aspect ratio of the screen, the quality of the audio, those kinds of things. And you just load it up as the source. You press a encode button or start button, and it reads the content of the CD, however, whatever chapters you want or the whole thing if you want, and puts it in a digital file. Where I used it a lot, and this is probably where congregations are going to find it most useful, is our congregation records our service to straight to a DVD. So we have a DVD recorder. So what we have to do to take that and get it online is to rip the content from the DVD into a format that we can upload to Vimeo. So what we do is we just do the sermon. So we take the DVD and we specify, from this time to this time, that's all we want. So extract that. Handbrake does that, loads it to the hard disk, and then now it's in a file that can be uploaded to Vimeo. So there's many other uses for this. A lot of people use this to rip movies or whatever to their home media players or to get them to their iPods or iPhones, those kinds of things. Obviously, you want to obey the copyright laws that are available, that are prevalent there. But this is one of the only tools that, well, I think it's the only free tool that works well. Handbrake is, and the URL is handbrake.fr? Something funky. It's not handbrake.com. It's handbrake.fr. Will take you to the SourceForge page for that, and you can download it. It's really easy to use and works well.
Yep. My husband is the video guy in our family, and I think this is in his arsenal, so useful tool.
Yep. Let's move on to community feedback, Sally.
Oh, we will do that, but we don't want to forget our seven best. I'm going to pop that up there on our map as We'll go to community feedback next, though, because we heard from Chris Miller, who is a member of St. Paul's and Onalaska, and he was writing in asking about live streaming their service and any copyright concerns that might be around the live streaming. And he specifically asked, you know, how is live streaming different than the people that put their services on television? And Martin, you had an answer for him, specifically pointing him to podcasting.
A podcasting licensing
agreements that are available.
Right.
And OneLicense.net has that.
OneLicense.net, CCLI does that. And those are the two big ones that our churches use. So they have podcasting licenses that you should use if you are doing any live streaming of the entire or any copyrighted material. That's not to say that all the things that you have in your service would be copyrighted under that agreement. But most of them are. But he asked a kind of another question, and I would look to our listeners maybe to provide any feedback here or advice. Is, well, how do local cable stations rebroadcast that? Are they covering copyright for that, or do you in some way have to provide that? I'm not sure. So that's been going on a long time, and I know a lot of churches provide the entire service to their local cable channel, and the cable channel plays it. So I don't know if there's some variance there or if that works a little bit differently. I'm not a copyright expert, but I would welcome anybody's feedback on that particular topic that question that Chris had.
Very good. All right, next up we heard from Pastor Jeff Cragen from Sephora Ministries. He is a news listener to Wells Tech, so we welcome you. We mentioned him last week when we were doing our Seven Beth show because he had written in at that point and mentioned that he liked YouVersion and also Accordance. Accordance didn't make our Seven Best list just because we didn't hear from a lot of people that were behind Accordance. It is a Mac-based tool that you can use for original language study, and I know we have some fans in our listenership that make use of Accordance. He wrote that he is a member of the Church of Mac, so he's a Mac guy, and Accordance is his go-to tool. And he says the top three digital Bible study programs for in-depth studies including original language studies are Accordance, Logos, and Bible Works. Clearly, Logos has done the best job of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
So they're definitely up there near the top of the list. So he's been using Accordance for years, and it becomes more and more powerful and faster with each upgrade. Some of the new iOS features noted for Logos are also available for Accordance, and I suspect each has its strengths and weaknesses and are equally valuable to the individual users. So great plug for Accordance and for our Mac friends out there.
Yep. And maybe that's one of the reasons it didn't make the top seven list, is that I think a predominance of our listeners are Windows folks, but we should probably remember not to overlook the Mac community, which is growing, I'm sure. And, again, this is really one of the premier products for a pastor who owns a Mac. So,
And then finally, we want to mention that we heard from George Kellerman, and that's another new listener that I haven't interacted with before. So welcome to the community, George.
Yeah.
He was asking a question on our Facebook page about using iPads in education. Specifically, he wrote, our school is considering using iPads in conjunction with flat screen and the Apple TV connector to serve as a makeshift smart board. It seems like there's a lot of potential for iPad use in the classroom. Any suggestions? And we'll just want to point to a couple of links that I shared with George on Facebook, a recent article from CNN about iPad as a solid educational tool. I think that was written after the release of the iPad or the iBook textbook resource recently. And then a couple of sites, iPads in Education, Ning, our social group that you can join and just get tons of resources related to iPads in Education. There's discussion boards where you can ask questions and lots of sharing and things on that site. And then Tony Vincent, our friend over at Learning in Hand, has a page dedicated to iPads in Education and has app recommendations and other links available from that page. So check those out, George, and hopefully they'll be a help to you.
Great. And thanks for listening. That's great. They're coming out of the woodwork, Sally.
Yeah, we'll take them. That's awesome.
Good. Is that it? I think that's it for community feedback.
Yeah.
Tell us about our seven best.
We don't want to miss a mention of our seven best coming up at our first show in March. I believe the air date is March 5th. I'm looking at my calendar. Sorry, March 7th. We will be talking about seven best teacher resource websites. So we're looking for our teachers in the audience to share their favorite websites with us. So where can others find great resources, and what kind of things are you taking advantage of that's out on the web to assist you in your classroom duties? So
what couldn't you live without?
Send us a message, leave us a voicemail, tweet us, whatever it is, we want to hear from you.
Very good. Next week, we are talking to a couple guys that at least one of them we've talked to before about some interesting stuff they're doing with daily Bible readings or daily Bible study, and how they're using technology to engage their congregation members to get into that Bible reading habit. So the general topic or theme of next week's show will be introducing your congregation to technology. So we'll be talking all about how you take your congregation along with you if you want to make use of technology, whether it be websites or email or social networks, whatever it is. How do you get them engaged? How do you get them involved in using those particular tools that you'd like to use in your ministry? So that and much more in next week's show.
Looking forward to it.
I am too. That's an interesting topic, and I think everybody kind of struggles with, because you have such a wide spectrum of people in your congregation. You know, some very tech savvy, some not so much.
Some from the Room 222
that's
era.
Right. That's right. All right, let's close the show with the music of Revelation. And we're coming up on Lent here, so it's appropriate to start prepping a little bit for that with some Lenten-type music. This song from their album Once for All is called Via Dolorosa. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.